The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Thursday, March 26, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, unemployment claims soar to 3.3 million people, more than three times previous record for a week. And next week's numbers will be worse. Meanwhile, the Senate passes a stimulus. It's worse than a missed opportunity. It's going to enhance many of the problems we have in this country. David Dayen will join us to discuss. Meanwhile, New York City hospitals are overrun by COVID-19 patients. Deaths begin to mount. New Orleans could be the next epicenter. Broad implications for the South. It turns out there is a literal National Security Council pandemic playbook. It also turns out the Trump administration didn't look at it. Meanwhile, a joint G7 coronavirus statement was scuttled because Trump and Pompeo insisted on calling coronavirus the Wuhan virus. And in addition to eliminating the pandemic specialist in China, Trump administration slashed the entire CDC staff in China just months ago. All part of an understaffed government which is hobbling the federal response. Meanwhile, in New York, those Cuomo prison workers are not actually making hand sanitizer. They're just repackaging it. Ohio to do an all-male primary, or all-by-mail primary, I should say. New York State Democrats are seeking a move of their primary date to June. Attempting to do so. Not clear it's going to happen. Federal court strikes down the Dakota Access Pipeline permit. And all this, and Trump's approval rating is at the highest he's had since taking office. All this and more on today's program. Nice. We are getting it together here, folks. Sweet fade out, Brendan. Appreciate that. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. We are we're ramping up. We're getting into the groove, as it were. I imagine by next week, there's nothing that we won't be able to do that we were able to do in the studio. Format is going to be more or less the same. We're going to try and bring you some guests, some of which will be more oriented towards the news of the day, some of which will be continue to provide interesting perspectives on our politics, on our political history, on our history in and of itself that shapes our politics, policies that don't necessarily have to do with this particular moment we're in. Stick with us, and thank you for tuning in and listening. I'm going to skip the plugs and notices today, and we'll bring that back tomorrow. Just to remind you, if you have a plug or notice that you want us to mention, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put plugs and notices in the subject line. We will plug file that notice. I want to reiterate one thing about what we said yesterday, and the links were absent inadvertently on our YouTube that we cut of that yesterday. We will reinsert those into the description yesterday, and we'll make sure that they're there going forward. I noticed someone had taken issue with the my comments on what had been released as a report by a German institute had done some study on the notion of smears of the coronavirus on surfaces. And I want to reiterate what it said was that there was no documented evidence of a surface having elements of coronavirus, right? I guess it has to do with virus clusters and whatnot, but there was no documented evidence of it being able, having it been a source of infection. But that doesn't mean that it's not possible. And that just means it hasn't been documented. And I can tell you that in my own practice, what we're doing is that if we get a package, we leave it outside for 24 hours. Or if we need to open it, we open it very carefully. I dump the stuff on the ground and I immediately wash my hands and leave the box outside. It cannot hurt to be overly cautious at this point, because there's a lot of the stuff we just really don't know. 6 months, we're going to have a much better sense of like what is a danger and what is not a danger, or what the percentages are. So I just want to be clear on that. I don't think that people need to panic about this stuff, but they do. I think like an abundance of caution is warranted. I hope that's obvious at this point. What's going on in New York City right now is it's going to get worse, but it's already pretty bad. And so we have links it was either yesterday's or the day before's plugs and notices. I think if you just Google majority report plugs and notices, the videos should come up. And we have them dated, and you can scan them pretty quickly. The notes are there. And I think we talked about how if you're in New York, you can donate stuff to New York City hospitals. There's a couple of different ways in which you do that. They desperately need personal protection equipment, like masks. There's some of these hospitals, they're wearing, the medical professionals are wearing plastic bags to protect them over their scrubs. And it's going to get worse. And I think, people are already starting to know people. I think Brendan said it yesterday that out of Italy, it was first you heard people, everybody knew somebody who had lost a job, and then everybody knew somebody who had lost a life, or someone who had lost a life. And so I guess it was Matt. But and I think in New York, we're going to start to get that sense. And there's indication that New Orleans could end up being another epicenter, which would, these are places where people came from out of town and then they go back to their communities. And I think what we're going to see is a rolling series of clusters across the country. And I think we're going to see that over the next 2 weeks or so, that those starting to bubble up. There's, like I said yesterday, there was a little bit of an indication that maybe infections were going down, because we are now about a week and a half out from when schools got canceled in New York, almost 2 weeks now. And so hopefully we'll see some mitigation. In the meantime, things are not, now we're starting to see the implications from an economic standpoint, when so many people have lost their jobs. We'll talk more about this in the coming days. These numbers, 3.3 million, those are last week's numbers. And that's before a lot of these stay-at-home orders. So 3.3 million, the highest number prior to that was, I think, like something about like 600,000, 700,000 in the 80s, I believe it was. It may have been after the 87 crash. But apparently those numbers were not seasonally adjusted. So like you could compare it to about 950,000, I think, was the highest 1 week total we ever had. And so this is more than three times that. And I have a feeling next week is going to be, could be close to double what we had this week. The idea of 10 million Americans losing their jobs over the course of 2 weeks is just, it's stunning. And so, you know, buckle up and get ready, because things are going to get difficult for people. Got a very nice email. I think I have it here. From Jenna. Heard you mention giving people relief, free subscriptions, which I love, but you should ask people to consider increasing too if they're able. I went from 10 to 19 a month and I'm sharing your clips more than ever. Also join Matt's Patreon. My 85-year-old mom is disgusted with MSNBC, so I send her to your YouTube show and she watches that at night instead. Hi, Mom. Jenna, much appreciated, but here's my feeling on that. And I do very much appreciate it. And if folks have the ability, you know, to support the show now, then great and much appreciated. And again, if you need to cancel, just go and cancel. We now have it built in to give you different options as to make it easier for you to, not easier, you will be able to get the content. So just you can cancel. For those people who canceled a week or two ago, I'm going to get to it this weekend and we will hook you up. But if you have the opportunity to increase your support of this program, my preference is, you know, once you join, that's great. I mean, if Tom Steyer's listening, I know that you can handle this, but everybody else, I appreciate you joining. I would rather you take that extra money if you were going to increase your membership. And we have, there's a lot of different things that we've been talking about over the past couple of days, and we will be talking about more in the future to help support people who have lost their jobs. So there's going to be increasingly, you know, more need for people. So that is preferable on our part. So Matt, what's the story? Are we okay with the internet? We just had an internet issue. Okay. Should we hold for a minute? Maybe take a quick break? Does that make sense? Did I lose Matt? Bear with us, folks. This is all part of it. I've got a new router coming to a new modem back at my house. Okay. I've got a new modem coming. The guy's going to leave it outside. I'm going to leave the old one outside, and we're going to do the switch from a distance. Matt, you're looking into getting a new modem, right? We're all upscaling. All right, good. So we are back, and I just to reiterate, I'm not sure when we dropped out, but we got an email from a listener, Jenna. She appreciates our giving out free subscriptions. She said I should ask people to consider increasing too. She went from $10 to $19. Like I say, very much appreciated. And I definitely appreciate people who have been listening to the show, want to continue to, you know, want to support the show, have yet to do so and have the ability to do so at this time. You know, we have so many people losing their jobs, but if you have extra money and instead of, upping your membership level, with us, you know, go to, some of the, plugs and notices that we've done, and there'll be plenty of opportunity to do that. One that I have for tomorrow, there's a GoFundMe to help housekeepers and day laborers who may not be in the system to get the unemployment relief, or in the short term, folks aren't going to be getting unemployment relief. And so I would I definitely appreciate people joining the show, but I also, you know, there are people out there who are going to be hurting, and, you know, we are, I think, more or less stabilized at this point. We have a lot of folks who need free memberships. And so if you can't afford, a membership, that's great, and do so. But if you have extra, rather than send it to us, you know, distribute it to other folks who are going to need it. There are folks going around getting food to people, to older folks who are, you know, locked in to their houses. And so, there's a lot of opportunity to give in this environment. And so I appreciate it very, very much, but, everybody's, we'll be fine. All right, let's start off the David Dayan interview I did last night. So it's pre-recorded. So we're going to start off with a couple of clips. Let's do something that's a little bit fun first, right? Because I don't want this to be all about, you know, there's, you're locked up at home, and you got to know what's important, and who better than Ainsley Earhart of Fox and Friends to let us know what's important. Ladies, please listen up here to this, because this is, this is great advice. Brendan, if you will, yes.
What's interesting too, you know, we're talking about this, and every day we're talking about different topics because we're moving in hopefully the direction of getting to where China is now or South Korea is now, and just getting some improvement. But
well,
I was thinking,
for one second. I mean, with all due respect to Ainsley, and I appreciate where she's going with this, we're at the beginning. We're not at the midpoint. We are not going, the graph is still going up everywhere in this country. This is delusion that she's talking about, but this is supposed to be the fun clip, so go ahead.
Our South Korea is now, and just getting some improvement. But I was thinking, you know, I live in the city. You can't go back to the city. You can, but I don't want to, because I don't want to be around the area that's infected the most. But I'm thinking, like, all the bills that are stacking up at my apartment. You know, we've got to think about that kind of thing. If you bought clothing before all of this happened, if you want to return it, or store is going to, you know, waive that 30-day period where you can get your money back if you need to return something. These are all the things. People are staying home. Women, I mean, y'all don't think about this, guys, but, this is not a priority, but women have to get their hair done. I saw someone tweet out, you're going to see what color our real hair is, because our roots are going to grow in. Women, all my friends are saying, this is not a priority. People are dying, and I realize that, but they can't get their nails done. You know, businesses are closed everywhere. We're in priority mode right now. It's pharmacies, and it is grocery stores. Those are really the only places people are going now, Steve.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a priority, but it is sort of a priority, I think, what Ainsley's trying to say. I mean, I think there's some interesting conversations about to be had about this, but I don't know. Chicken salad, Ainsley Earhart. But
one thing that I want to mention briefly, Matt and I were chatting about the chicken salad chick, and she's trying to organize a rent freeze for her restaurants in some of the locations.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to know. That is good to know. We got to keep track on that. I wonder if Ainsley's coming out. Did Ainsley mention that?
I'm not sure. I'll check in with
That'll
her.
Be interesting if she gets out and says, like, landlords need to back off. That's the part that I'm waiting for, Ainsley Earhart to be like, landlords need to back off, everybody. We need to freeze rents. We need to freeze evictions. In fact, we need rent forgiveness. Because I have a friend who has a chicken salad restaurant. All right, two clips that I want to play before we get to this conversation with David Dayan. I don't know if these moments had happened. Certainly the Rick Scott did. Maybe the Bernie did. But Dayan addresses these. In this interview, he is, it's a very interesting take, and you should listen to it. Let's start with Rick Scott, because this is, Now, there were four senators, as far as I know. Maybe you guys can maybe correct me if there were more. But there were four senators, as far as I can tell, who came out and gave the line. Do we have that Lindsey Graham thing, too? Where Lindsey Graham talks about the nurse. We should pull that for later. Lindsey Graham came out and said something to the effect of, like, you know, you don't want this unemployment insurance. You don't want a nurse to get $24 an hour as part of unemployment insurance because, and David Dane will explain, unemployment insurance covers anywhere from like 65 to 90%, depending on how much you made, will cover you that while you're unemployed. And in the stimulus bill, people will get an extra $600 a month. So theoretically, the idea is to bring people up to 100% of what they were making or close to it. In some instances, particularly if for very low wage workers, it's conceivable that for a month, you could make 110% of what you normally made. That $600 may be big enough that it actually pushes you over what you would make on a normal month. So Lindsey Graham was out there complaining that nurses might be offered on unemployment $24 an hour. And then they may decide not to go back to work because of that $24 an hour. Now, it's an absurd notion, and Dane takes it on, we're headed into, at the very least, a severe recession, but probably a depression. And the idea that someone would walk away from their job, any job, because they're going to make an extra, $50, $100 in the next month versus the next month is absurd. The idea that you can walk away from your job and be eligible for unemployment is also absurd. You need to be fired. Your boss verifies it. And then it's also sort of offensive to assume like, oh, well, yeah, nurses, they're just in it for the cash. Like of all the people, like, you know what? I think if that was the case, they probably would be walking off the job right now. But putting that aside, I think there was something going on with South Carolina, but we'll talk about that with David Dayan. But here is Rick Scott. He is one of those senators who was threatening to hold up the stimulus bill on the idea that some low-wage workers could actually make 110% of what they would have made had they not been fired, and that would somehow keep people from wanting to work. And it's just an absurd argument. But Rick Scott is also one of the worst people to make it. And here is a reporter asking a fairly obvious question. Rick Scott is the richest person, I think, in the Senate. Play this. Bear with us 1 second, folks. We're working on audio. I'm watching Brendan. Bear with us, folks.
Being a smartass, and I'm not, but do you understand how bad the optics are to have probably the wealthiest person in the Senate potentially holding up this bill over a couple of $100 for some of the poorest people in this country?
Well, you're not talking to me, but I'll weigh in.
So here's what I care about. I want to make sure that our small businesses, all of our businesses, including our hospitals, our nursing homes, everybody can make sure people want to come to work. And I also want to make sure, which I in the bill that does it, you have an unemployment system in the states that work, and we need to continue to work that, and we have a supplement to it.
I want you to just contemplate what he's revealing here. He's saying if we pay, if unemployment inadvertently or on purpose, this stimulus bill, gives people who have been fired. This is how unemployment works. You get fired or laid off. You can't quit and collect unemployment. Now, maybe these guys don't know that, or maybe they're just lying. But even putting that aside, let's talk about just the broader idea that if you were for a month to give someone 100% of what they would earn, that they wouldn't want to work because they're making as much unemployed as they would when they're working. I don't think he understands what the word want means. I think what he means to say is that if you were to give people 100% of what they could make at work, then there would be no leverage over them. Then we wouldn't have the ability to say to them, you better show up at work or you don't eat. You better show up at work or you don't get health care. You better show up at work or you won't be able to buy toilet paper on the black market or wherever you're buying it. That's what he's saying. If you want to work, you work. What he's saying is that we don't have the leverage to force people to blackmail their ability to survive if unemployment is too generous. Now, like I say, that is completely not how unemployment insurance works. You need to be fired or laid off to collect unemployment insurance. But just the mentality there. That dude doesn't need any money. Rick Scott is incredibly wealthy. He made millions of dollars working as the CEO of a company that was fined the largest amount in history for Medicaid fraud. So he's extremely, extremely wealthy. But yet, he shows up at work. So in other words, what he's saying is that, like, with folks like that who make that little amount of money, you need to threaten their ability to survive to get them to work. And if you lose the ability to threaten them with that, then the system breaks down. It's a perfect illustration of the dynamic that is existing for a significant number of people in this country. I don't know, half, quarter, that people like him who represent, you know, the top, I don't know, 1%, maybe actually probably less, top 0.5%, the way that they perceive these people. We must continue to leverage their ability to survive to allow them to, you know, to get them back to work. Let's hold the Bernie clip till after the interview with David Dayen. So let's take a quick break, or we'll just load up this interview. Do we even need to take a break? Do we? We'll take a little brief break, and then when we come back, David Dayen, executive editor of The American Prospect. Be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. David Dayen, the executive editor of The American Prospect. David, you are subject to a stay-at-home or shelter-in-place order in California. How's things going out there?
Yeah, it's a stay-at-home order. My wife and I have been pretty much confined to the house for the last 2 weeks. We kind of started before they even put the order in place, but everything's fine. I mean, it's what was really eerie is at the beginning of this, when this all kicked off, it rained in LA for 2 weeks, which is about 2 weeks more than it rains during the year. And that just made this creepier and more eerie, like something was changing within the world. Now it's become more pleasant. And the air quality is insanely good. You can actually see blue in the sky most of the time. And it shows you how much we had been punishing the atmosphere. And if you just let up on that gas, literally, you get a complete transformation.
Oh, that's fascinating. I hadn't even thought about that. But yes, that's I imagine the traffic in New York is also really not as unpleasant as it normally is, and you can get across town. But I guess
that's, you had anywhere to go.
Exactly. Well, all right. Let's. We should say that we're having this talk 9 o'clock on Wednesday evening. So we're going to be playing this on Thursday. So this is going to be last night. I don't know what new developments there will be as of tomorrow on Thursday, but as of today, the Senate voted, and they did not vote in favor of this bill, this massive coronavirus phase four, I guess, bailout bill. They took a procedural vote that indicated that they were ready to vote, but that seems to have fallen apart a little bit. Let's put that on hold for a moment and talk about what's in the bill to the extent that we know, right? Because it's we still don't have the full text, do we?
We don't. And not only don't we, but even members of Congress that I've spoken with do not have the text yet of this information. The members of the House were on conference calls all day on Wednesday going over things in the bill, but only with a summary, not with the actual bill text. So everyone is in the dark here. We have some outlines of what's in there, and some people have seen bits and pieces of language, but I don't think anybody other than the principals really know every single thing that's in this thing in terms of the language.
Just give us a sense, like, how does a bill like this come together? I mean, I'm not sure that folks have like a clear picture of this. Isn't just like one person sits down and writes this thing, right? Like, I mean, how does a bill like this come together?
I mean, usually there's a negotiation process with the top line officials. So in this case, it would be Mnuchin and McConnell and Schumer. Maybe Pelosi had some input, maybe not, not sure. But those people would hammer out the sort of broad strokes. And then there's a whole bunch of staffers who have to turn whatever gets decided into legislative language. Committee chairs might have something to do with that, and their staffs, when they have expertise around, you know, something to do with the Agriculture Department or something to do with the Justice Department, whatever. So their leadership staff and also committee staff could have a role to play, but it's really at the staff level the thing actually gets written out. I mean, Mitch McConnell does not write bills, right?
Right.
Chuck Schumer does not write bills. They hammer out the broad strokes and they leave it to someone else to details.
And we should say that those details are often it's almost like an aggregation of lobbying interests in many respects, right? I mean, it depends on who, which staff we're talking about. But in terms of those people who are writing it, they're going out and they're saying to the lobbyists who are knocking on their doors, saying, "This is what we need," right?
As this thing gets negotiated, lobbyists are certainly involved, clued in on the process, trying to get the best deal for their clients. That's definitely part of the whole way that this works. Something like this that was so quick, it's hard to know exactly how that process works. But I can tell you that it really depends on whether there are countervailing forces or not as to what the bill ends up looking like. So, for example, you have the airline part of this bailout, just to use this example, and there are some decent conditions on the airlines in terms of they get subsidies, but those have to go directly to workers and keep people on the payroll, and there are protections for labor. And that's a direct result of having labor at the table For example, in the form of Sarah Nelson, who's the head of the flight attendants union, that's a result of them being there and making sure that that language was in there. These other industries, there's this sort of almost no condition bailout, this money bazooka that they've created, where $425 billion gets pushed over to the Federal Reserve to capitalize a credit facility that can be levered up 10 to 1, which means it's over $4 trillion.
Okay, now wait a second. Let's go slowly into this, because I think this is the part that I think people find confusing. I mean, because this is, you know, today on the program, we talked about some of the things. You know, there's $1,200, I believe, if you are making under $75,000, it's a one-time payment.
No, let's just be clear on that. It's if you were making under $75,000 in 2018, not now. In 2018, because that's the tax year that they're using as the basis for the means testing, which means that if you were making $75,000 in 2018, you're going along, everything's fine. Suddenly you get fired and you have no money coming in. You end up getting, if it is, let's say you made $100,000, that's the cutoff threshold where you get $0 in this direct payment. You would get nothing. Let's say you got downsized in 2019. In 2018, you were riding high. Now in 2019, you got downsized. You were struggling all year. And now this coronavirus crisis hits and you're in tough position. Oh, you were rich in 2018, so you're not going to get anything. So I don't understand how that got allowed to stay in there, this ridiculous – not only is it – you can have your concerns about mean testing, period.
Right.
But to means test based on 2 years ago is absurd. And it's going to leave so many people, stuck between the cracks on this. I'm stunned that that was allowed. The way, if you really wanted to means test, way you could have done it is say that everybody gets it. And then in the 2020 tax year, next year,
you claw it back.
You made a certain amount in 2020, you claw it back.
Right. Which, of course, is the smartest thing to do anyways, because that's also tied into the fortunes going forward. Right? I mean...
Right, and it's also you're distributing the relief now. You're getting it out the door now.
Right.
So that... And if you claw it back later, it means that it has the most stimulative effect in the near term. So, I mean, on so many levels, that was the way to go. And, of course, that's not the way it was done. And that's true of so many pieces of this bill where it's suboptimal for individuals, for small businesses, and we can get into this. But for the largest corporations in America, they get the gold star velvet rope service.
All right. Before we talk about the gold star velvet rope service and what the Fed is doing, let's talk about a couple of those provisions, because I hadn't read into that it was based off of 2018. We should say that on top of which, I guess there's expansion of unemployment. Now, my understanding is that for a month, it expands by $600 per person. It also expands. It expands in terms of how much people get, and it expands as to who is covered. That so that they're supposedly, from what I read, and you'll tell me something. Maybe you'll have more information on this. But as far as I remember, the expansion includes gig economy people, contractors, freelancers, and people who are furloughed but are still on their businesses. Healthcare plan. I'm not sure I fully understand that. I guess that's because you're sort of in between and you haven't necessarily been picked up by the anemic social safety net. But what does that, is that as advertised? Is that how would you rate that?
That's pretty much as advertised. And this was the big piece. I mean, if you would talk to the Republican leadership, they would say that's the big concession that they made and the big piece that Democrats got out of this bill. And what it would do is if you add $600 to what you normally get on unemployment insurance in every state, then that pretty much replaces 100% of wages for the typical worker, the median level worker. So, you know, anyone who was fired gets essentially their wage for 4 months, not for 1 month, but for four months. There's a lot to be said about that. Now, the caveat that I have heard from policymakers is that the state level unemployment systems, which is what you're going to go through in order to deliver this relief, are very scattershot. Some of them are okay in some states. You can imagine that other states underfund their unemployment insurance systems. And I'm not talking about the money that goes toward, I'm talking about the mechanics of it, right? Like just the system itself is creaky in many states, on the verge of collapse in many states, and woefully unequipped to handle the rush of claims that they are seeing, unlike any time in American history.
Right.
So we're now relying on this kind of creaky infrastructure to deliver the biggest part of individual relief to the most struggling individuals in this bill.
To give people an example of the, you know, you design a machine to deal with a certain amount of intake. And in California, if I'm not mistaken, something like new unemployment claims, maybe it's California, was something like 2,500 people a week. And this week, it's going to be like hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. I mean, there are more people who are going to be unemployed, filing first-time unemployment claims in California for last week. And we're going to see those numbers on Thursday morning. There will be more people that file in California by a wide margin than filed all of the last 2 weeks in the entire country combined. So this is something that, you know, there's just a on these unemployment insurance systems that is not equipped at this level.
Hold on for a second. We sort of lost you there for a second. Go ahead.
Okay. This is the federal government punting to the states to achieve the mechanism of delivering this relief. And I think we need to be seriously concerned about that.
And the alternative, of course, would be just simply somehow the feds step in and make this have the IRS do it. I mean, how would they? What's the alternative?
I mean, that's a whole other problem. And it gets into how they're handling the direct payments, because, you know, this $1,200 direct payment is a different thing than the unemployment stuff, right? And the way they're doing it is through the IRS. And what they've said is that if you have direct deposit with the IRS, and about 70 million taxpayers do, that's how they get their refund, is through direct deposit. If your direct deposit is on file with the IRS, you will get that money in your bank account within a few weeks. If it's not, it could take up to 4 months for you to get that $1,200 check, by which point, if you needed it, you won't need it in 4 months because you'll already have been destroyed. So this disproportionately obviously affects the unbanked, those that don't have a bank account to give to the IRS for direct deposit. And that's, we know who those people are. They're the most vulnerable in society. They're the lowest wage earners. They're disproportionately people of color. And so the federal system is not great at locating, identifying people and delivering them relief either. So you have these creaky systems that we don't use that often. We rely on them to a certain degree, but they're slow and they're clumsy and they're not accustomed to delivering mass amounts of checks or deposits at one time. Right. Okay. I mean, that's these systems sort of work when it's spread out and they only have to do a certain amount per day, like in tax season or in a normal unemployment cycle. But having to do all of this right now, there's just a pipe that's not big enough to handle that.
Well, so I mean, how would you structure that? I mean, if David Dayen had the opportunity to do it, what would you do? Just cut checks?
Well, I mean, there was another bill that came out in the last couple of days by Rashida Tlaib, and her solution was to do it through prepaid debit cards.
Right.
And that you would mail them to everyone. Or there's probably, I mean, the funny thing is, we're doing a contact with every individual in the country, or as many as we can find, right now. It's called the U.S. Census.
Right. Right.
And, you know, that kind of architecture is commensurate with the architecture that we would need to deliver this kind of relief. So the way that Rashida Tlaib does it is she mails one to everybody. If you get two and you use two, she cleans it up on the back end in terms of, you know, if you find fraud, then you have to deal with it the next tax season. And then she sends people out into the country in communities that may not have received this stuff, like the homeless or maybe even undocumented immigrants, and does a program of delivering this directly and also making that a wellness check. So we see actually what the needs are in the community and how people are doing to really cast a wide net. So that's one example of another way that you can do this. But honestly, this is a function of an American sort of infrastructure that just doesn't deal well with this right. kind of situation. And so, you know, there might not be a good answer here.
That's what the advantage.
And that's troubling.
Even in Italy has an advantage over us in this respect. I mean, all the European countries, I mean, really just about every other country, right? I mean, industrialized country that is dealing with this. They have a pre-existing infrastructure, social safety, the social support infrastructure, whatever you want to call it, that means that they don't have to deal with, you know, huge swaths of people falling through the cracks. They're already taken care of. They're already in the system.
And also lots of them have postal banks.
Right.
So, and you could certainly do this that way, where you give everybody with a social security number, a bank account, you know, through the Federal Reserve, and the post office is the distribution mechanism for that. And you just, you know, top up the account and you give your social security number and you get the prepaid debit card with that money on it. I mean, there are ways to do this, but America doesn't deal with those ways very well or often. And so we're seeing kind of failures within the system as we go along.
Right. I mean, this exposes this crisis exposes all sorts of weaknesses in our society, frankly. I mean,
yep, absolutely.
All right. So let's move to the good news. If I was the CEO of a major corporation or perhaps a member of the board of directors or frankly, a major shareholder, you know, this is this coronavirus
Happy
is not my fault,
here again.
Right? Exactly.
So, you know, in 2008, the banks were irresponsible for many years. They created this huge housing bubble and then let it collapse, causing this cascade through the system, creating recession in 80 years. And they said, "We need money. We need to be bailed out." And if you remember, Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, wrote this bill like on the back of a napkin, a 3-page bill that said, give me this money and I can do whatever I want. There's not even any judicial review. There's nothing. And Democrats balked at that. But what they ended up getting was a 5-member oversight board and an inspector general. That was all the oversight. It was all after the fact oversight.
Right.
And they essentially gave the $700 billion with very few strings attached. So flash forward 12 years, there's an external crisis, coronavirus crisis. These companies didn't create it. They didn't sustain it in any way. However, these companies were irresponsible for about 10 years using, achieving record profits and leaking them out to investors, creating a system of globalization that left us incredibly vulnerable to this kind of attack in terms of the supply shock, making us no longer resilient to create our own medical supplies, our own pharmaceuticals, things like that. They, created this extreme situation of inequality where our workers were so desperate that what is it, 40% can't find $400 in an emergency, and now all of them are facing an emergency. So they were irresponsible for a long, long time. And so the Treasury Secretary says we need a lot of money to give to these people without any strings attached. And they even wanted to make the loan secret for the first 6 months so that we wouldn't even know who got the money. So Democrats balked at that. And what they ended up getting is they canceled that secrecy thing, and they got a 5-member oversight panel and an inspector general and very few other conditions, and they let them have the money. So it's really, here we go again. 12 years later, it's a very similar scenario to what we saw during the 2008 bailout. I would argue it's worse because in that instance, it was $700 billion. Of course, actually, the similarity is that the Federal Reserve was really the ones bailing out the banks, right? There were trillions of dollars in special emergency lending facilities, right, and things like that. The reason that the $700 billion bailout came from Congress was almost to get them on the hook for this situation so that they couldn't really cry foul as much because they voted to give this money to the banks as well. And I think that's what's going on here. So as I mentioned, this $425 billion of this
$2 trillion.
This of the $2 trillion is going to be transferred over to the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve will, as I mentioned, lever it up. In other words, put in their own money at 10-to-1, creating a $4.25 trillion money cannon, and point it at whoever wants it,
raises
really,
their hand.
That's a large corporation.
Now,
when you
say lever this up, they're just saying that, like, we're just going to do matching funds. Like, I mean, so they don't need that 425. If they're going to go in and they're going to loan.
Well, the 425 is sort of the capital. It's like they're creating a bank almost. And the 425 is the capital. It's the 10% capital. So if there are losses,
right,
the losses don't go to the Federal Reserve. The losses go to that capital. That's what absorbs those losses.
Right.
So that's kind of the way to think of it.
So they're capitalized. That they're basically Congress is starting a bank, and they're putting the bank of corporations, and they're saying you've got to have 10% capital reserves here. In the meantime, the Fed can loan out all this money at is it 0%?
I mean, it's probably a very low interest loan. They put no conditions on the terms of the loan. We don't know what the collateral will be for the loan. I mean, very little is known about what these loans will look like. What we do know is that there are the conditions on any corporation that receives this money are extremely limited. And the Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, can override any of those conditions if he sees it in the interest of the American people. I mean, like, basically at his discretion.
Right. Well,
he can
override any conditions.
And there aren't many conditions to begin with. The one big one is that it bars corporations who take this money from doing buybacks for the term of the loan. So, I mean, the next year after they pay back the loan, they can start doing buybacks. And, of course, they can do dividends at any time during the loan, which is just a different way of leaking out money to investors. So this is not really a binding constraint. There's some very weak executive compensation constraints, so they can use this money to deal with executives. There is no constraint on workforce payroll, so they can fire people if they wanted to do that anyway. They could get rid of people. The sky's the limit. They can use this money for any kind of financial engineering, mergers and acquisitions, scooping up distressed companies, whatever they want to do, it seems like they can do it. And we won't know about it until after the fact, when the oversight panel and the inspector general get a report. And of course, that oversight panel is not going to be chaired by Elizabeth Warren, as it was during the bailout. And that inspector general is not going to be Neil Barofsky,
right,
as it was during the bailout. It's my understanding of the panel, which is 5 members, is that each leader of each chamber of Congress picks one of them. And then the last member has to be determined between Mnuchin and Pelosi. So I don't know who that's going to end up being, right. But I don't think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
And the books, the Inspector General, I'm not sure either exactly.
The books that are written about this are not going to be basically revealing how corrupt it was. The books are going to be written like we did it. But for people who don't sort of appreciate, like, okay, they're loans and they're paying it back. The problem with this is that we are extending the, basically we're giving to these corporations a printing press where they can print money. Like, you know, if you loan me $1 million interest free, I'm going to be able to, like, I could buy a CD and I'm going to make $20,000 in a year. Like, I don't have to do anything and I'm going to make $20,000. I give you back that $1 million. That's all well and good. But the problem here is what we're doing is we're tying up a ton of money and we're giving it to these corporations. And ostensibly, that is to make the economy. It is ostensibly the supposed rationale here is that these corporations are the engines that is going to create wealth and financial stability for the entire American public, right? And the problem is that we're saying you don't have to use the money that we're giving you, the value that we're giving you, which is free money. You don't have to use it for that purpose. You don't have to use it to power the car. You can use this fuel that we're giving you to sell on the black market or to burn your house down or whatever it is. And you don't have to use it for the purpose that ostensibly we're giving it to you to use for. And so what we're doing is we're creating a tremendous amount of wealth. You know, we're giving them that we're just creating wealth inequality, and we're not even doing the supposed primary function or agenda that we're espousing.
Right. I mean, you know, a couple things there. Number one, what this ends up being is a bailout of the shareholders and executives of these firms because they are getting money really cheaply that they are bound to turn into profits to undergird them through these times. I remember Matt Taibbi, I believe it was, calling the money given in the bank bailout the mother of all carry trades. Like, if you get money at 0.1%, you're going to make something out of that. And if you're not, you should be fired because you're an idiot.
Well, so, like I said, you could put this money in a CD at the local
license to print money.
You could go to the local bank and put this money in a CD and you're going to make money. You don't have to do anything.
Right. You're going to do something with that. And the other thing is, think of the landscape in which this money is being given. So we're going to be in this deep recession or depression. These firms are going to be extremely well capitalized. Small businesses, on the other hand, are going to be at near their end.
Right.
Their $300 billion, $350 billion that is earmarked in this bill is a fraction of what these large corporations are getting, and they're being administered by the Small Business Administration, which is one of the worst agencies of the entire federal government. Incredibly slow getting this money out. Could be too late for a lot of these companies. And so this money cannon is capitalizing these firms that now have free rein to take over real estate, take over other smaller firms, and really transform American society in many ways by, you know, concentrating wealth and power. And they're going to be able to do that because they're being given this carte blanche from the government. And it's a really disproportionate relationship between the firms lucky enough to get this money and the millions of smaller firms that aren't going to be that lucky.
And we should say this, the small business, I think, like you said, I think it's $350 billion, and some of it may be forgivable loans, that some of which may be basically forgivable if it goes directly into
payroll. And this is one thing that's interesting. So, you know, that's the condition to forgive these loans on the part of small businesses. There is no such obligation on large businesses. They don't have to keep payroll. So they have much more flexibility than these small businesses do, where their loans or grants are going directly to individuals, which is great. The other thing is that because the government is doing this unemployment boost for 4 months, that sort of takes the stigma away of mass layoffs because people are going to be made whole anyway, right? So it's clever. They're like these large firms are backstopped by the government away from the stigma of being able to, you know, they're more flexible to fire people who work for them. Perhaps they wanted to already. They wanted to downsize certain locations, things like that, which means that the money gets freed up. You know, small businesses have to use that money on their staff. Big businesses don't. They can use that money towards whatever the heck they want. They can use it towards executive comp. They could use it towards dividends to give money to shareholders. They can use the money towards M&A, mergers and acquisitions, to buy out these other companies. So it's just a different relationship in terms of the terms and conditions, and that's going to facilitate the acquisition of wealth and power on the part of these big firms.
But my understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that in terms of the small business loans, if I was to go out and pay my employees that, you know, I get a loan for, you know, $100,000 and I pay my employees with $75,000 of that, that $75,000 will be forgiven. The other $25,000 yes. I need to pay back in a year. But again, I'll just put that in a CD. If I'm paying 0% interest and the CD is going to give me 2% interest, whatever. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I make, $5,000. But okay, I made $5,000.
Everybody's going to need help in this, right? I mean, there's no question that this was not the fault of the airlines or the oil companies or the banks or the restaurant down the street. Everybody is going to need some help to deal with this massive public health, social, and economic crisis. There's no question about that. The question is, do we use this crisis to make sure that we're more resilient and better prepared to deal with such things in the future? And that means making sure that we have a more equal society.
Right.
That means making sure that we have a more resilient society so that we have domestic capacity to deal with things that are, you know, national emergencies, which we're learning includes food and medical supplies and things like that. So we could have built that into this, and we didn't. And instead, what we built into it was a tremendous advantage for large corporations to sort of take over the landscape of America.
So the analogy is more like what we're doing is, you know, we're all driving under a yellow flag right now in the race. Everybody is equally, you know, is basically we're under a yellow flag and the government is coming in and it's basically saying, okay, here's the deal. You, the biggest corporations we have that are driving around this track in a yellow flag, we are going to give you the green flag. And everybody else, you're going to be under the yellow flag for a little bit longer. And that's basically what we're going to end up with at the end of this. They are going to have lapped us. And the problem is going to be any problem we had in terms of income inequality, wealth inequality in this country that existed 3 weeks ago is going to be exacerbated by multiples. I mean, we can only imagine, really, basically, because, you know,
I think that's right.
Your local Italian restaurant around the corner, they probably won't survive. But if they're part of a huge holding company, then maybe they'll be moved. You know, it'll be Olive Garden. I don't know if Olive Garden is that, but people get the gist. So,
and we were already, of course, in this position. Like the retail apocalypse didn't start with the coronavirus, right? I mean, we were already seeing this shrinking number of firms that were able to really, engage in mass retail sales to the public. Amazon was already taking more market share. Walmart and the dollar stores and Costco were already, you know, the ones that were dominating in this space. And that's just going to accelerate rapidly. So I mean, that's the fear that I have.
We're not only not taking this opportunity to deal with our structural problems in our society, we are making them significantly worse with this. All right. Two more quick questions. One, my understanding is that four Republican senators have come out. I think it's Tim Scott, not Tim. Yeah, Tim Scott. It is.
I think both Scotts.
Yes. Yeah. Rick Scott and Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham. I don't know what it is about South Carolina, why they're getting there must be a big employer. I don't know if it's Boeing. Somebody's pissed about it, right? Because that's a coincidence that both these guys from South Carolina have a problem with the unemployment insurance. It doesn't make sense to me.
I think both of them don't actually understand anything about unemployment insurance. So their objection is that certain individuals might make more.
We just lost you.
Hello, let me try it again. Their objection is that these individuals, some individuals, low-wage workers, might make more if unemployed than employed for the short term in which this system is in place. So, and that's 4 months, right? And you know, if you cost it out, they're getting an extra $600 a week. And that's on top of whatever their state gives them for unemployment. So if you were making the minimum wage, yeah, you might get a little more for a short period of time in unemployment. However, you as an individual cannot say, I'm going to quit my job and take unemployment. That is not how the unemployment system works.
That's right.
Yeah. The unemployment system, you only get unemployment if you are laid off. If you are fired, or not even fired, you're laid off.
And to be clear,
you can't make a choice to go on unemployment. And even if you could, this is a short-term program. So what person out there would say, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to make myself get laid off somehow, and I'm going to make more money on the dole. And then in mid-July, when unemployment is at 25% and I get cut off from that extra money, I'm somehow going to find another job. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, I heard Lindsey.
And I struggle to understand it than the fact that they think that somebody somewhere is getting a better deal.
No, they're lying. I mean, first of all, Graham got up there and he said, like, if I'm a nurse and I can make $24 an hour on unemployment, which, of course, is absurd because a nurse is not working minimum wage. And therefore, right, their relationship with unemployment is only going to cover whatever it is, 70 to 90% of what they're making. Anyways, the $600 may bring them up to 100%, maybe 105%. But the bottom line is they're lying. There is an interest in, I mean, this, there's no explanation other than there is an interest in South Carolina, some big employer who does not like what the bill means to them. And so they've gone to Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott and said, this is a problem. So Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham pretend it's about unemployment. They go in, they're going to get something in there that's going to be tweaked. I don't know, you know, what employer it is down there, if it's Boeing or somebody else who's going to get some tweak that they want. And all of a sudden, Lindsey Graham is going to see the light. And that's what's going on with this. And I imagine that Rick's...
I struggle to understand what that could be. You're probably right. But I don't really understand.
The two senators from South Carolina?
More ideological. It might just be more ideological that here's this undeserving person that for a short term period of time, as a result of a national emergency, they're going to get a little bit more money, something in like the hundreds of dollars. By the way, we're talking about a $4.25 trillion money cannon, but somebody somewhere is going to get 80 more bucks a week, and we can't have that.
Yeah.
What I feel this is about.
I have no doubt that they find that repugnant, but I just find it a little bit too convenient that two senators from the same state, Tim Scott and Lindsey Graham, are both sort of like so ideologically aligned on this, whereas the rest of the caucus is not. I find that hard to believe. But be that as it may, Bernie Sanders has said, well, if you guys hold this up, and somehow strip this out of there, I'm going to put a hold on the bill as well, just to make sure that we get the bill that we, as advertised. But the bottom line is, Sanders should be doing this anyways, seems to me. Sanders and Warren should both be saying, like, no, insufficient. Now, with that said,
I completely agree. And I think what Sanders is doing is actually quite cynical, because it sounds like he's objecting to the corporate welfare when in fact he's trying to enforce Chuck Schumer's deal.
Yes.
He's saying he's trying to create a mutual non-aggression pact. Like,
yep.
I'll make a stink if you make a stink, but if none of us make a stink, we'll just pass this bill. And ultimately what that does is it encourages the passage of this bill, which has these terrible corporate welfare,
yep,
and transformative implements in there. And you know, Sanders is part of the Democratic leadership. Like, people forget that. Like, I feel like he's being the muscle on this for his old high school classmate, Chuck Schumer.
Yep. Did they really go to high school together?
They did.
I did not know that.
Well, there you go.
So this isn't the end of it, though, right? I mean, this is, first of all, okay, then I lied.
I think it is the end of it.
Well, is the House going to sign off on this?
This situation with Graham and the you know, their objection will somehow get ironed out. I feel like the bill will pass tomorrow. I feel like the House is in a really up against the wall situation. They have sick members. They don't want to come back to Washington. They do not have anything in place for remote voting, and I feel like that was by design. And so they're either going to pass this by unanimous consent or a voice vote, or one individual can go back and object. They have to get to Washington, make the objection, and then force everybody else back. We become a pariah within Congress,
mm-hmm,
because you're the one that created this public health situation and put me at risk personally for having to travel all the way to Washington. No, I feel like nobody's going to do that ultimately. And this thing will get rubber stamped in the House, because there's no other way to do it unless Pelosi is willing to put up a different bill, which I don't believe she is. She wrote a different bill that had a lot of superior elements to it. But I feel like that bill was just for show. It was just to show her members that she listened to their concerns. And ultimately, I feel like she's more than comfortable with taking what McConnell and Schumer put together and putting it on the floor, knowing that nobody's going to object, because to object would be to subject 535 members or 435 members to a public health risk.
Right. Okay. So with all that said, this is phase four, they're calling it, right? Or phase three?
I think three, yeah.
Is there going to be a phase four?
I mean, that's dependent on events. I think there's probably a desire on the part of Congress for this to be it. I know that the Senate is leaving town after this is done, and they don't want to come back until the end of next month. So certainly on their part, they see their work is done, at least in the near term. The House is already out, and there are significant issues with them returning right now. I just was made aware that Katie Porter is self-quarantined because she was exposed and she has some symptoms of the coronavirus. There are other members. One of them is hospitalized, Ben McAdams, a Democrat from Utah. There are members on the Republican side. There's Rand Paul. So I just feel like it's without some sort of remote voting system in place, it's just going to be difficult for hardcore legislating in the near term here. But it's all going to be dependent on events. If this doesn't work, if the money from the direct checks don't get out right away, if the funding for the unemployment insurance malfunctions in some way, if individuals are at, on the brink, while and small businesses as well, because that system isn't working well, while corporations are enjoying excellent profits because the Wall Street has the stock market has gone up, then I think you're probably going to have to see more to be done. And obviously, if our health system falters and collapses, if this starts to run rampant, if Trump brings people back for Easter, there are a whole host of factors, right, that could happen, from rent strikes to general strikes of entire businesses who say, I'm not going to commit a death warrant and go to work for you. There's so much that's unknown here. So to say, is this it? It's just hard to say.
David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you walking us through this.
All right. Thank you.
Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8. 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.